This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to 4.0 to Pro, the pickleball podcast that focuses on a single shot, tip, or strategy to improve your pickleball game with every single pocket-sized episode. Our goal is to make you better on the court every time you hear our voices. And now your hosts, 4.something Michael O'Neill and USA Pickleball National Silver Medalist, Senior Pro Scott Fliegelman.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of 4.0 to Pro, your pocket-sized pickleball podcast, which teaches you a single shot or strategy every single episode. I'm Michael O'Neill here in sunny Long Beach, California. I'm joined by my good pal, Mr. Scott Fliegelman, right there at Boulder Pickleball in Boulder, Colorado. Hello, Scott.
Hello, Michael. How are you?
I am fantastic. I'm really psyched about this show, which is playing with and playing against lefties, which is the bane of my tournament existence, Scott. I feel like I lose in the semis or the finals to a lefty almost every tournament that I play. So this will be a good show for me.
I was going to say, it's only been your bane because you haven't been playing with the lefty. I love playing with lefties.
It is a little challenging. Before we get into it, though, guys, we have a huge announcement. We are bringing 4.0 to Pro to life. We are going to be hosting a weekend camp / clinic in Boulder, Colorado. Last weekend of October, which I think is the weekend of October 27th, we've got very limited spots. We've got a regular track and a VIP track. The information's the same, but the VIP day is the day prior to the camp, and you get to spend the entire day with myself and Mr. Scott over there drilling and working on stuff. We are excited because we're going to bring, with Scott's idea, share your idea about the content of said clinic.
Yeah, I'm excited. I hope our listeners and potential camp attendees are as well. We've got 30 shows already. We know some of them are your faves. Others, you know, you kind of glossed over a little bit. But we'll do a little survey amongst the camp participants. Which 4 to 6 shows would you like Michael and I to bring to life, expand upon, show, demonstrate, have you practice, get feedback, specific mechanics, strategy, all of those things? We're going to bring a couple of shows to life, and we hope you'll join us.
It's also going to be in Boulder, Colorado in the fall, which to me is one of the most beautiful places in the country in the fall. We'll have a chance to eat some meals together, to bond, to get on the court together a lot, and to have a blast. If you are interested in this clinic, we're doing a save a date, if you will. Just go to picklehelp.com, picklehelp.com. There's a contact form there. Just send it to us. We will get your name on the list. There are very limited spots. So if you are interested in this, make sure you send that email in, and we will be taking the emails in the order that they are received. Thank you guys, as always, for sharing the show. 402p.com/Apple and 402p.com/Spotify. If you can share it in your Facebook groups, on Instagram, etc., please leave us a rating and review. And finally, if you'd like a carbon pickleball paddle, CRBN, the promo code is 402p, and that's 10% off for your favorite paddle. So Scott, let's jump right into playing with and against a lefty. To me, there's sort of two cardinal rules that you have to adhere to, like, as you're stepping on the court, Number one being to stack or not to stack. And I think you and I are in a massive agreement that if we are in the 4.0 to, what'd you say, the 4.0 to 6.0 range, that we should be stacking.
Yeah, I think we'll reference the exceptions during the show. But yeah, we really need to generally be doing this. There's too many negatives that come along with unstacked lefties. So let's start with being really comfortable with stacking, especially with one lefty, one righty on the court.
I had this idea just before we started where there's been so much confusion in the middle, especially if you're playing rec and you get on court with a lefty and you guys have never really played together before. People can get a lot of points against you guys because of the communication issues in the middle of the court. So my thought was, you've got to decide on an alpha, meaning you're going to decide on the person that's probably going to take most of the forehands in the middle, since you will both have a forehand in the middle. And in general, I'm going to say, like, go with the one who has the better forehand. But I'm curious if you have any thoughts about how you might disseminate that responsibility.
Well, on the show, we've talked before about one strategy for avoiding confusion in the middle is the player who starts on the left side in a right-handed world is stoked. They're like, you know, my forehand's in the middle. And before this rally starts, I know I'm going to be 20% more aggressive, 20% more talkative, more verbal, more calling mine. Yay, I get more balls. But when we've got a stacked lefty on the other side, now we've got two forehands in the middle, which doesn't really help. It's kind of like two backhands. We're not really sure who's supposed to get that ball. So my most successful righty-lefty outings have been with Ryler DeHart, who is a big hitting lefty. And we don't have to talk about this much, but it's really nice to minimize confusion, knowing that Ryler's the alpha and he's going to, you know, handle much of the middle responsibilities after we've stacked and gotten ourselves into the rally.
Episode 18, you guys, if you haven't dialed in on how to stack, when to stack, et cetera, it's episode 18 of this very podcast. So we've got a couple scenarios. We've got when we're serving, we've got when we're returning serve, and we've got when we are at the net. So let's talk about playing with a lefty at all three of those spots. Number one, on serve. And this, by the way, if you don't want to stack on return a serve, which sometimes, I don't know what they call that, a soft stack or something like that. Sometimes you can do it just on the serve, although we are going to recommend highly that you do it of serve and return.
But just on serve, that's called a half stack.
Half stack. Okay.
So when just stacking on serve, we call that a half stack. And when only one of you is interested in doing the running required on return of serve, then that might be called a three-quarter stack if your partner doesn't want to do that running after hitting return.
Right. And that could be they have a technical issue, maybe they don't move that quickly, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe they've got a bum knee or something.
Or their returns just aren't super high quality and they don't buy themselves enough time to get there.
To stack on the serve, it makes returning to one of your backhands really hard. It really forces them to go alley. They really have to hit a very good, precise corner shot, which is, you know, taking away, I don't know, 2/3 of the court from them if they have to just go alley, right?
Yeah, I really don't like having to return against a stacked righty-lefty team with a bunch of forehands in the middle. I'd rather take my chances trying to hit the ball to one of the player's backhands. And if their more alpha partner wants to come all the way over with their forehand to take that, at least it opens up their part of the court. So there's some downsides. The other benefit that they have, or we have, if we're the righty-lefty team stacking on serve, is it's quite favorable for shake and bake. If either one of us feels comfortable driving off our forehand, we're likely to be seeing a lot of forehands for our thirds. And then we've got a forehand in the middle for a fifth, which is really nice because sometimes when we go to shake and bake, we end up with our partner having their backhand in the middle, which just isn't as good for the bake part. So righty-lefty stacking on serve, consider shake and bake as a really good option.
Which is another thing that we're going to talk about Ben Newell a little later in the show, but that's another way that they helped beat the Johns brothers here in Newport Beach. So the other really big thing I alluded to before, but this is a super important piece that not a lot of people do, which is choosing an alpha. So if you're playing with a brand new person, you guys both have forehands in the middle, someone has to be that alpha that's going to take most of those balls. Otherwise, you're going to get into a lot of trouble with like mine, yours, yours, mine. And the team you're playing against could pick up a few points really quickly with that confusion in the middle. It's really helpful, especially if you know how good your teammate's forehand is, for you guys just to work out, look, you're more consistent with yours. You take those forehands and I'll be there to back you up. Like, this is going to be how we play. Otherwise, you're going to get a lot of confusion. You're going to lose a lot of points from it.
I like your suggestion, and I will do that, whether I'm the alpha or what is the other guy, the beta?
Well, you do that with Ryler. You say to Ryler, you take these balls. And what it does really is it gives us this A-B into, like, now we know what our role is and we can be better prepared for that next shot. We're going to talk about like the net and counters and that kind of thing. But your body positioning and your gun can be loaded in a certain way that when you've got to cover the right and the left isn't as easy to do. So it's really advantageous to make this choice.
I agree, and I'm in favor of it. But I know we're going to have listeners that might say, I don't know if I can do that with my regular partner or at open play. So here's the backup plan for that is you should be doing this regardless, but we're going to need to be much more proactive in calling the ball. So I think that middle ball, whoever can call it first, it's your ball. Let's make the goal of calling it before it clears the net. If you want it, call it. And I think if you got two forehands or two backhands in the middle, at the very least, let's just be much more talkative and claim that ball.
Right. So why don't you talk us really quickly through the two different options on return of serve, whether we do singles or the Johns style, or sometimes you see it in mixed doubles a lot.
Yeah. Regularly speaking, when stacking, I prefer singles, which, you know, traditionally a closed fist means I'm not really going to switch sides. I might fake a little, but I'm not going to switch sides. Or an open hand means I'm going to end up on the other side. So we play the rally on our preferred side. So I like singles because it produces some level of confusion and movement for the other team to be worried about when getting ready to hit their third. And that works at all levels. There are some downsides to it. In particular, you know, if I'm hitting the return, I've got to hit a pretty good, deep, high, time-consuming return. And then I have to cross over my partner and I lose sight of the other side of the court for a second. And sometimes, yeah, you know, they drive that third and it causes some problems. So it's not always the best way to go. Another option, and again, I don't recall if there's a formal name for it or not, but Ben and Colin Johns do this all the time because there's no mystery. Everyone knows, right? Ben's going to play on the left and Colin's going to play on the right every single point. So they minimize any of the potential for downsides. And one player just stands off to the side of the court on their preferred side. The returner now has a wide open court to hit their return into, doesn't have to cross over their partner, and they just, you know, hustle it over to the other side. So with a lefty, if you're pretty much playing every single point on the side that you prefer to be on, consider the John style approach as an option because there's not going to be as much confusion as with two righties.
Yeah, they just stand outside the service box and step right in. There's no massive crossover that has to happen.
Correct.
So two little notes from my Monday Rec League ladder thing. I was playing mixed and we got caught a couple of times where I'm already up front. So I'm the one who's got to go. I was on the right-hand side. I needed to go to the left-hand side. And my partner got the serve, but then the return was maybe not as good as we would want it to be. Maybe it was a little bit short or on that serving side, a little bit too much. And in the time it took her to go from the baseline to work her way all the way up diagonally to the right to get to that kitchen line, they just laced a ball down the line because she just gave him an easy ball in the middle that was kind of short and kind of high. So this is where that it's really important for you guys to coordinate. Well, if we're going to do this, we have to both make sure we know where we are going on that return of serve. You've got to go at the very least to a corner somewhere to make it really difficult for them to find a ball to rip it on. You're going to have to strategize a little bit on where you're going to hit your returns, but certainly high and deep is the way to go. Don't try to rip it because you're not going to have enough time to get to where you got to be.
Yeah, let me clarify your excellent advice there is I think if we're not worried about stacking or unstacking, high, deep, and down the middle is always a great return. But if right. we are stacking on return, high, deep, and down the line is the
down
way
the
to
line.
Go. If we go cross yeah. court, we open up that down the line ripper and our partner can't help. But if I go down the line, the partner who's switching can clog the middle and help with that. So high, deep, and down the line is a great default return when you're stacking and you've got to hustle it over to the other corner.
So just to clarify, to visualize this thing, if I'm at the kitchen line on the right side, my teammate is returning the serve. I'm on the right, They're on the left. That ball comes to them. They're going to try to hit it down the line to the person directly in front of them versus middle or the rear right corner, because I'm going to be vacating that very quickly. Now we're going to have a huge gap on what would be the deuce side or the right-hand side of the court, that if you don't really nail that return, the ball's coming back that way. And you're going to really be, if you're on the left-hand side returning that ball, you're already hustling to get to the line. You're not going to have enough time to really stabilize and hit a good ball if somebody hits a nice drive at you. The other thing, Scott, is that we were actually doing the John's method for a couple of games where we were just basically standing outside the service box. But what I found was they were really ripping it at my teammate. We didn't really get enough variety of shots going one way or the other. They just kept going to my partner. So I said, look, we're going to probably have to do some signals. And we were able to get a few points by either switching out and stacking or faking the stack where we were, you know, pretending like we were going into the other spot. So of course the team hit the opposite way and I was sitting there waiting for that ball because we didn't actually switch. So it was very strategic. And certainly at this level, I didn't feel like we were trying to do something super pro. I felt like we were doing what we were supposed to be doing.
Which is why I think signals is generally a better way to go, because it keeps the mystery and the confusion and the surprise. And the Johns don't really worry about that because everybody knows where they're going to end up playing the point.
Right. So the alpha idea is really important at the kitchen. I really love this. You described this a few episodes ago about how you would play with Ryler, which was you are able to speed up the ball. So you're basically playing on the left-hand side. He's on the right. They're both forehands are in the middle. You're able to speed a ball up and not worry about your right shoulder, which would be the middle counter. The counter's coming right back down the middle of the court to your right shoulder. All you had to do is protect your left side with a backhand, and Ryler would be the guy that would cover your right shoulder. So it really gave you like 50% of the responsibility that you would normally have on a speed up, and allowed you again to position your body a little better for the counter and be ready for whatever came. You know, you're already sort of torqued in that way versus having to decide I need to go right or I need to go left. And to me, that is a really cool, very advanced technique of this righty lefty interaction.
Yeah, and I think doing it with an alpha is better, but not required. So either right. player can feel good about a straight ahead speed up, which is where we should be doing our instigating, straight ahead, not to what appears to be the middle opening, and to certainly not cross court. And after that speed up happens, we're just finishing our follow through. We're not as balanced. We're not as aware. My partner is going to slide in my direction and help me out with my inside shoulder, and vice versa. I can do the same for him. You know, whether it's alpha or not, if my lefty partner speeds up straight ahead, I'm going to be looking to help out with that counter, because we've got a couple of forehands sliding toward the middle to help out with that. I think it is one of my favorite parts about playing with a lefty is we've got those two forehands in the middle, and it just gives us license to speed up because we know we've got help with that counterattack.
All right, so let's say you're playing against a lefty. So we have a couple of things we need to detect right out of the gates. Number one, have they chosen an alpha? Can you tell based on the first couple of points who's going to take that ball? If not, it is worth a few points in confusion. It's a few confusion points right at the beginning of a match. So that's one. And then the second is, are they stacking? So have they paid attention to the two cardinal rules we started this show with? Because if they're not stacking, man, when they switch and you've got two backhands in the middle, it can just be point after point after point after point. It really can. If they don't know how to stack or they don't really execute it as well as you might want, man, you can just point after point after point. And certainly at this level, Scott, we got to be stacking and we got to choose an alpha.
Yeah, and I think at a 4-0 or 4-5 tournament, it's going to be rare to see an unstacked lefty team. I think they've figured that out. But rec, open play, you got two people that haven't played together before. One of them's less comfortable with stacking. You may see that, and you can get some practice with it. Obviously, when you've got the two backhands in the middle, it opens up one of my favorite rare double secret shots, which is the third shot lob down the middle. Mm. When you got two backhands there, and it's an approach shot, you're going to get a backhand overhead, come weakly back, and in you go. One of my faves.
Yeah, I love that. What are your other sort of, you know, tenets that you follow when you are facing a lefty?
One of them is, if I'm heads up against a lefty, I can do one of two things. Is I can screw up my instigating targeting a few times until I remember I'm playing against a lefty, or I'll be 10% more conservative for at least the first game. So I can really settle in. I can't rely fully on instinct when I'm playing a lefty in front of me. My instinct is to go right shoulder as my instigating target. So I'm going to have to go against instinct, and I'm going to want to settle in for a little bit. So I'm going to holster a couple of speed ups early on, even though normally I might go ahead and jump at those and maybe break those out in games two and three.
Man, I'll tell you, as I mentioned before, it's like when I'm in the tournament, I seem to always face these lefties in the semis and the finals, and it's like worth 4 points for me. I forget. I go, oh God, I did it again. I just fired it right back into their sweet spot. And really, they have this huge advantage because they mostly play righties. So they have this very skew. I don't know what the percentage is. They're playing like 90% righties. So they're just used to that game. Whereas we're, you know, very green when it comes to how we're going to play these guys. So it's very, you know, they've got opposite spin on their serve, and their slice could curve the opposite way. It's just something to really pay attention to.
Let me add, under the heading of conservatism, I like to holster my kitchen area lob out of the air, which is one of my weapons that I like to do. I may still do it, but I like the cross court one, and the cross court one does not work when I've got a lefty and righty on the other side. Either one of them is going to get that thing out of the air and remind me that there's a lefty. So I holster that kitchen area lob a little bit more as well.
Our last little tip here is to minimize the middle dink and then dink to the backhands. And I mentioned something about Ben Newell. When they beat the Johns brothers, they actually reverse stacked. So they had one righty, one lefty, but the lefty would play on the left-hand side and the righty played on the right-hand side. And that's because Ben and Colin will just wear you down with dinks. They'll hit 100 of them. So those guys said, let's just have our forehands on the outside and just calmly get into that dinking battle with them. They also did the shake and bake that you talked about earlier. And those are the two things that really neutralized the advantage of the Johns. But in general, what are your dinking preferences against lefties?
I like to go to the backhands. I go to the corners. I visualize cones out in the corners. And I'm staying away from the middle most of the time, unless I've decided that they're a new partnership. They're not as skilled with the partner communication on that middle ball. They haven't declared an alpha. And most people, you know, that backhand dink out to the corners is not as strong as their forehand. So I've got two of them to choose from. So I'll default to that.
Well, that's perfect. Guys, if you are interested in our live clinic in Boulder, Colorado, last weekend of October, just drop us a message, picklehelp.com. You can also find us on Instagram, 4.0 to pro. Scott, thank you as always. I know you've got to get on the court. Guys, thank you so much for listening to the show and being part of this whole thing. I think, Scott, I know you got to go, but I think we are just we're about 5K downloads away from 100,000 downloads for this particular podcast, which we'll hit in a couple of days. It'll be great. So thanks to you guys for listening and paying attention. And thanks to you as well, Mr. Scott. I'll talk to you guys soon.
Thank you for listening to 4.0 to Pro. For more tips, find us on Instagram at 4.0 to Pro. If you have a pickleball question, submit it at picklehelp.com. Now get out there and dominate. But don't forget to have fun.